probably knew that. It's the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. And today, first, we are going to go into work session. We have House Bill 5027, the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, and House Bill 5028, which is the Oregon Health Licensing Agency fee bill. And then following that, we will then close the work session and do a public hearing on Senate Bill 426A. So those of you that are here for Senate Bill 426A, we will be up to you shortly, but as I said, first we're going to do a work session on the Health Licensing Agency bill. So with that, I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 5028, which is the Oregon Health Licensing Agency fee bill, and I'm going to turn it over to Deborah Manthe from the Legislative Fiscal Office to please give the LFO recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. House Bill 5028 is the fee bill for the Health Licensing Agency. In the table and the recommendation, I've laid out the fees that the agency increased administratively during the interim. These fee increases were discussed as part of their 2005 budget and were assumed in both that budget and in the 07-09 budget. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of House Bill 5028.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments on the LFO recommendation on the fee bill? No. Okay. Do you have a motion? Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I move the LFO recommendation on House Bill 5028.
Senator Devlin has moved to support the LFO recommendation on House Bill 5028. Are there any objections? So moved. Okay, now I'm going to open a work session on... close the work session on House Bill 5028. Thank you very much. Now I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 5027, Oregon Health Licensing Agency, and I'm going to turn over to Deborah Matthew for the LFO analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House Bill 5027 is the budget bill for the Health Licensing Agency. We heard from the Director, Susan Wilson, yesterday. I'll start in on policy package recommendations. I want to say that since yesterday and into today, there's been considerable conversation, or at least email exchanges between the agency and myself. The agency, as you might imagine, is not terribly happy, and I'm hoping that we can work through some of that and maybe a compromise in here about how to proceed. I have been instructed to move the bill, and as we get to the packages that aren't recommended, then we can talk about what kind of compromise or so that the agency can feel like they were heard. Policy Package 101, Licensing and Enforcement Workload Increase. This package adds positions to the Complaints and Enforcement section. It's a 50% increase and adds one position to the Licensing and Credentials section. The agency requested a position increase to address a backlog in inspections and increased demand for services and oversight. The recommendation you see here is that it's not recommended, and it's primarily not recommended because of a lack of the data to support the requested increase. Susan Wilson, the director, has made it clear to me that she didn't feel like I communicated with her that I wasn't receiving the information that I needed to make a recommendation. And so one of the options is that even though the bill passes that out to full, that the agency and I can continue working so that they can make sure that they felt heard, and that if it turns out that positions need to be added, that those could either be added in an end-of-session bill or agency could return to the February special session and get positions as well. So that was kind of the compromise on that one. Package 102 is the Information Technology Package. It provides for one-time information technology initiatives to expand e-commerce services and improve database efficiency. As I've noted in the memo, there are both one-time and ongoing costs. This package is recommended. Package 103, Position Reclassifications. It appropriately classifies two positions based on a review by the Department of Administrative Services. We also recommend approval of this package. Package 201 is the uniform fee structure. It adds revenue associated with the agency's proposed uniform fee structure. Effective July 1, the agency proposes to implement administrative changes to make the application, license, and facility fees for each profession under its jurisdiction equal. The recommendation is that this package is not recommended. I think, as I've discussed with the agency, staff this morning, that it is a difference in philosophy in how fees are set. The agency's proposal is to set it at the agency level, essentially one cost pool, and equally share the cost equally between the professions under their jurisdiction. The legislative fiscal office position is that that should be at the profession level, so that each profession's fees generate revenue that reflects the cost of the regulatory oversight being provided to that profession. Packages 202 and 203 are the policy packages that add the revenue for the ratification of the fee increases that are in 5028 that you just passed out. We recommend approval of those two packages. Moving on to LFO adjustments. Package 801, statewide adjustments. As I usually tell you at this point, we don't know what those are yet, so I don't have any to make at this time. Package 802, the co-chair's 2% reprioritization. It is the LFO recommendation that this additional reduction not be taken. And then I have some technical adjustments that corrects the cosmetology national exam phase-in, shifts some budget to appropriate line items for the e-commerce transaction fees, and implements some line item changes that I've detailed for you. It does generate a reduction of $93,748. Mr. Chair and members, with those adjustments, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends another funds budget of $5,515,593.27 positions, 27 FTE, and that House Bill 5027 be amended accordingly, and assume then there is the opportunity that the agency still has to work with the Legislative Fiscal Office on the position request.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Senator Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a note here that says groups have been working for months on agreeing on a licensing fee of $21 a year. I won't read the second sentence, but this has no opposition in the community. So I'm not sure why, if the folks out there believe that it should be $21, why are we not agreeing with that? And Ms. Nathan, you write in your recommendation that it's because some of them have different regulatory oversight?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I think, again, it's a difference in philosophy on how fees should be set. And fees are traditionally supposed to recover the cost of the service being provided. And yes, because of the diverse nature of the professions under the jurisdiction of the health licensing agency, from midwifery to respiratory therapy to barbers, tattoo artists, that it seemed like it makes more sense from a fee standpoint, again, from a legislative fiscal office standpoint, that the fees be set to recover the cost of those cost to regulate those individual professions. Because each one of them, you would think, would have different levels of regulatory oversight that's required.
Well, could I ask a follow-up question?
Senator Walker.
Thank you. And for instance, let's take a barber and a respiratory therapist. What kind of different level of oversight should provide between those two?
Senator Walker, I would imagine that the qualifications are different for a barber and for a respiratory therapist, and that in evaluating the licensure to approve the application and the licensure, that there would be a higher level of review process. I would also think that a complaint investigation would be somewhat different for a respiratory therapist, and therefore those would guide the costs of oversight. Could be frequency of complaints for a particular profession, the complexity of the complaint, how long it took to resolve that, those kinds of things.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chu.
Thank you.
It was pointed out to me by Representative Cromwell, and this certainly predates my experience, that when this health licensing office was created, that the actual intent was to have level fees. And I don't know if that was driven by actual wording in the statute that created this agency or not. And I'm not too sure how we reconcile with that with this recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I didn't see explicit language in the statute that said that that.
I'm sorry, we're having difficulty hearing at this end of the table, and if you could speak up, it would be very helpful. And I'm sorry for the interruption, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think what I was saying was that I didn't see anything explicit in the statute that said that the objective was that all the professions under the jurisdiction of the agency would have the same licensing fee. I understand as Representative Kremel came to see me this morning as well, and he expressed that that's what the intent of when they created the office was. It's difficult for me to reconcile those two things at this point. Which isn't a very good answer to your question, but it's the only one I have.
If I can, did you have a follow-up, Senator Morris?
No,
I really like to comment. There's been discussion. I think sometimes when, certainly there's an understanding, you seek innovation and you try to do things in a different way, and it's a challenge, not simply because something has been done a particular way, but I think there were several questions in testimony yesterday, and I don't know that members of the committee got the answers and the responses to really make the connection between this fee structure change. So having said that, this is an ongoing conversation, and I don't think this goes away. But I do think in yesterday's testimony we had an opportunity, and I can't remember if everyone was here yesterday, but we did have some opportunity to have some, I think, a worthwhile discussion. And the concerns about linking license fees and actual workload, I think, is something that it's going to be ongoing, but I think at this time this is where we are. Senator Devil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo that I do believe that our action here today doesn't in any way end this discussion. Obviously, the agency still has the ability to make the case, and I actually do understand the sensitivity the Legislative Fiscal Office has to this issue. Having served before in previous sessions on the General Government Subcommittee and on this committee, where I think between those two committees, have not served on Human Services, which is where the rest of the professional boards are. The issue over fees is sometimes a very difficult issue to deal with, and you hear a lot of concerns expressed by various professions in terms of whether their costs are being accurately represented by their fees, particularly when it comes to DAS service charges to agencies or the necessity of AG's charges to various agencies. So I can see where LFO comes from in this sensitivity to this issue, because Representative Jensen is now the chair of that committee, the General Government Committee, and I believe Representative Morgan has probably virtually been on every subcommittee. that you see, actually, because I've heard the same discussion. I mean, in the years I've been here, I've heard the same discussion about fees. So,
Further questions or comments? Yes, Representative Varner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have been trying to review in the last couple of minutes some of the materials that came from the agency, and it seems to me that somewhere in here I found a note that the legislature had approved some portion of this idea in 2005, and I wondered if you can help me with that. Excuse me. I think it's on page 7. And maybe to amplify on that a bit, in the statute, it describes the development of uniform applications processes and oversight processes, and it establishes a centralized and uniform method of dealing with investigation authority, discipline authority, and things of the like. And then I have another question if I get a chance to ask it.
Oh, sorry, I was a little taken aback. I didn't know what question. It was getting me a little nervous. So. In the interim, we'll just wait. Representative Barnard, you had a question? Not to rush you.
Thank you. My allergies act up in a manner that's not necessarily predictable, so I appreciate your indulgence. I'm prepared to vote out this bill today with the recommendations as proposed, but I am concerned about the apparent lack of controversy anyplace except in our own operations. I'm concerned about the Ways and Means Committee overruling agreements that have been made unless there's a good reason to do that. There may be very good reasons to do it, but I haven't been persuaded yet that there are. I guess part of the question I want to ask has to do with what the authority is of this agency to set fees among the various boards, and some very practical problems with the current fee structures, I understand. That is that some very small boards have extremely high fees, $1,500 or in that neighborhood, which makes it more difficult then to make plans involving that profession because of the cost. Other agencies have very low fees because of very large numbers of licensees. And I'm wondering what plans we ought to make if, in fact, we adopt the recommendation for dealing with that disparity and the difficulties that leads us then in getting people practicing those professions under the umbrella of these licensing boards, and therefore providing the kind of protection that the people of Oregon deserve. I see those as connected, and I think a conversation about that would be very useful before we make this decision.
Well, I'm going to take Chair's prerogative and say I think these are important issues that, again, this committee and others need to struggle with. I think considering where we are today and what we've got on the agenda, I hope that we have a motion on the LFO recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So moved.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the LFO recommendation be approved. Are there any objections?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker?
Okay. Yeah, I'll be voting no. I wasn't here yesterday. I was out of the building, and I just feel there's not enough information for me. I don't feel comfortable with this.
Okay. Any other objections?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair, I'm very concerned about the committee in involving itself in this way. Well, we do have oversight authority and responsibility. There's no question about that. But at the same time, I don't understand why it is that we would exercise it in this instance against a board which has, as far as I can tell at least, done the things that it needs to do in order to pursue this issue. Now, I'm going to vote for the recommendation, but I'm not convinced that this is a place where it's wise for us to behave this way. And I'm concerned about it for the reasons that I expressed in the process of trying to ask a question.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Representative Jensen.
That's fine, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support the recommendation today, but I'm going to reserve the right to dig a little deeper into this before it gets to full and before it goes to House.
Thank you. Any other objections? Okay, so please note that Senator Walker opposes the LFO recommendation on House Bill 5028, and seeing no further objections, motion is adopted. Okay, now we please talk about the performance measures. Deborah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Attached, you have the form listing the agency's performance measures as they presented them to you yesterday. The recommendation is that they be approved. I have indicated the revised targets based on the approval of the technology package that the agency submitted. The revised targets were submitted by the agency. LFO recommends approval.
Are there any questions or comments on the LFO recommendation for the performance measures?
Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate, I move approval of the LFO recommendation.
Senator Devlin.
Performance measures.
That's, Senator Devlin has moved approval of the performance measures. Any discussion? Any objections? So moved. All right, now we need to move the bill to the full committee as recommended. Do we have a motion on the
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 5027 be reported to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Can we do both? One time? 5027 and 5028? I'd like to combine them.
Okay.
So you're
Senator Devlin 5027 and 5028.
Okay, you're great. So Senator Devlin has moved the House Bill 5027 and 5028 be moved to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so moved.
All I need.
Representative Morgan, would you please carry the bills to the House floor?
I will be glad to.
Okay. And Senator Devlin?
Yes.
Would you carry? Okay, great. So I'm going
to
now
to the floor. To the floor.
Well, Mr. Chairman. Will you?
Yes, I'll carry it to the floor.
All right, really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to close the work session on House Bills 5027 and 5028. Thank you very much. Okay. Yes. All right, I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 426A, which establishes the Oregon Educators Benefit Board. And let me just kind of give an overview of the way we're going to do this. And we're going to start. At some point, I'm going to have a list of all the folks who've come to testify. Okay, but first we're going to have, as agreed upon, 15 minutes for... I'm going to call up Jeff Brown of Watson Wyatt to introduce the measure and discuss it and talk about Senate Bill 426A. He has 15 minutes to do that. And following that, we will have 15 minutes for, and I'm not sure if I have Kevin McCann, Ron Wilson, John Peterson. They can either come up together and take that 15 minutes. I'll leave that up to you. And then following the 15-minute presentations, then we will alternate. So the person who's supporting the measure or sees it favorably, the Senate Bill 426A, will come and testify and probably have about 3 or 4 minutes, and then someone in opposition can have about 3 or 4 minutes. Obviously, we're also going to look to distance traveled. So those of you that, and I see...
I think we're going to have some issues around alternating.
Are we?
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll deal with that. How about while we're... let me call up Mr. Brown. There he is. And Mr. Brown, we'll give you 15 minutes to introduce us to and talk about 426A. Oh, yes, and before that, I apologize. I'm going to turn over to LFO. Darren Hill is going to talk about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, I've got a lot of people to get through here. I just want you each have a packet here, and the packet contains Senate Bill 426A, and then I went through and did a kind of a brief synopsis of it in kind of an outline format for you so that you can go through and see what each section basically does. To the back of that, there is the staff measure summary from the Senate committee. where this was first heard. And then there's also a copy of the revenue impact statement, which says there is no revenue impact.
Thank you, Darren. All right, so, and one thing I had forgotten to say is we plan, the committee plans to be here until 5 o'clock, so hearing this. So. All right, Mr. Brown, you have 15 minutes. Please proceed. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you. Chairman and committee, I thank you for inviting me here today. My name is Jeff Brown. I'm a senior consultant with the consulting and actuarial firm Watson Wyatt. We were engaged to review a body of work in support of pooling employee benefits for school districts. And as part of that review, we came to the recommendation or the conclusion of those studies that there was sufficient evidence to recommend that pooling in the state of Oregon had promise for saving money for the education community. Senate Bill 426 was created to establish the Oregon Educators Benefit Board, which would be charged with managing a statewide pool. It should be said that Oregon currently enjoys a couple of voluntary pools through associations, and that this bill takes that enjoyment to a higher level. It does it in a couple of different ways. One, going from a voluntary status where a portion of the state is covered to a mandatory approach that would bring all education employees into one purchasing pool. This would eliminate an element of adverse selection, allowing for greater stabilization of the population. But initially, what I want to draw your attention to is that this bill addresses the cost of administration. It doesn't alter benefit plans. It brings together the employers of school boards and or school districts, pulls those employees together to enable a greater purchasing. And the savings that have been calculated in this study come from administrative overhead. It comes from those costs that are aligned with running and operating employee benefits for those employees. By way of background, the bottom slide on the first page calculates the rough cost of providing health insurance for the education community in the 2006-2007 school year at about $800 million. And you can see that by the time we reach the 2011-2012 school year, we're just shy of $1.2 billion. Based on the methodology that we reviewed and concurred as appropriate and reasonable to consider, we then applied those methodologies to our cost, our local costs, and projected a savings over 5 years of $270 million. You can see that it was $29 million in the first year as the program begins to unfold and grows to the $60 million level for the years 3, 4, and 5. We considered these studies to be reasonable in their methodology in that they addressed those elements of health insurance that have been that are really most basic in terms of operating our health plan, and that is the cost of processing eligibility, adjudicating claims, issuing checks, reinsuring for large unpredictable claims, and for coordinating any other aspects of the administration of these plans. When we reviewed these studies, which were done by competitors, we deemed them to be appropriate and their methodology sound, and we agreed with their conclusions and then went on to apply them to the state of Oregon. If we go to the top of the third page here, where we're comparing states, while Oregon has a smaller population than Michigan, which I would like to focus on, of about Michigan being about 2.7 times higher. And looking at the population within the school, the education community, there are some striking similarities. Both states have a dominant health insurer. Both of them are Blue Cross organizations. Both states have dominant voluntary associations. And both of them have a strong contingent of smaller school districts that are predominantly insured. When we consider those factors, we're able to glean from that entering into a mandatory self-funded plan that covers all employees would benefit all school district employees in one way or another at varying degrees. So the study also reviewed various states that have considered pooling and found 13 that have recommended come to a conclusion that savings are there to be had. And those are listed at the bottom of the page. So those that are concerned about the savings that that are generated from this report tend to speak to the overall cost of a plan, which is largely made up of claims, when in fact what we're looking to is gleaning those immediate savings that can be obtained from those underlying administrative costs and charging a benefit board with managing the benefit levels and the overall delivery of health care. So the similarities between these states and the other studies are they address claim administration costs. They address stop-loss premium. And they also address the relevance of broker commission that's paid in those. So you can see at the bottom of the page that we have constructed a diagram that shows the relative scaling down of these cost areas. And you can see in that diagram the claims remain the same. Because what the Senate bill recommends, or how it is instituted, is that no district would have to take a lesser benefit program nor endure a higher cost. Further, what we've done is we've taken the projected savings of about 6.3%, and we've illustrated those for school districts of various sizes moving from one of two different environments. The top aspect addresses school districts that have independently arranged for their health insurance through a broker or an agent directly with an insurance company. And the bottom half of this addresses school districts of varying sizes coming out of the voluntary association environment. What you can see is that smaller districts are much more advantaged than larger districts. They pay a higher percentage in overhead for their insurance costs. And as you drive towards larger employers, the savings comes down, and you can see that the largest group, 2,500, is slightly below that 6.3, and that, of course, averages out with the smaller districts. Those that are already in an association realize some of the savings from a pooled approach, and we've calculated that by size based on a more consistent overhead. But the bottom line is that even though there is a fair number of school districts that are currently in a pooled arrangement, moving to a whole system still leaves substantial savings to be realized by districts within the state. Beyond the initial savings that would come from those reduced costs, the organization of a benefit board frees up the attention to be to address areas such as the PIB has done in terms of how we can more effectively deliver efficient care, quality of care, necessary care. A couple of other closing comments. Part of the reason that we feel that this creation is beneficial is that with smaller school districts, they get limited information from insurance companies. They may get some gross claims information, but it's very difficult to glean any credible analysis of their particular claims compilation. By moving to a large statewide pooling system, you would have very credible data with which a board, which would enable a board to make decisions. So we would gain insurance cost transparency. We would gain disease burden transparency, and would have an opportunity to make informed decisions as opposed to very high level cost to cost types of competitive decisions. So with that, I would welcome any questions.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Brown. You went to 3:49, so we've definitely got some time for some questions, if there are any, on the panel. The committee. Senator Devlin.
Well, thank you. Mr. Brown, we had the pleasure to serve with each other on the Oregon Health Policy Commission now, I think, for a number of years. When you started your presentation, you mentioned the firm that you're from. Could you sort of give a background statement of the firm and the type of work that the firm does and what the clientele of the firm has been?
Watson Wyatt is an international consulting and actuarial firm. We originated as pension actuaries and have grown into all areas of human resource consulting. Our primary audience or marketplace is larger employers. The economies of scale and the ability to gain information enable us to exercise our profession, our analysis with that kind of data. The types of clients that we have would include, I'm not sure we're not prepared to disclose all of those, but they would be large airlines, they would be automobile and truck manufacturers, they would be hospitals. It's our general practice to ask permission to disclose our clients.
Follow up, Senator Devlin.
Mr. Brown, one of the comparisons that we will hear today here is making an extrapolation from this proposal to a direct comparison to PEP. Is there a flaw in making that direct comparison from an actuarial standpoint?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate that question. There is and there is not. There is in that it establishes a governing board. It is not in that it doesn't require that board put together one plan or one basic plan of benefits and impose that on all school districts. It's different in that it allows this board to provide a larger variety of benefits that would not, in its inception, take away benefits from any of the school districts.
Senator Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am just shocked that I have a new question, having gone through, been involved in this, but I actually just thought of a new question that I have not at least asked you, or I'm not sure I've asked anyone in that has expertise in this field. You are familiar, obviously, with designing and looking at health benefits in several, and you mentioned kind of the general companies that you work with. Are you aware of any company that uses, or private entity, that uses the disaggregated form that we have here in Oregon, where you have this 197 different decisions made, sending one bill to that central headquarters? Have you ever come across a private entity that operates in that fashion?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, no.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Reference is made extensively in your analysis to a 2005 Michigan study and a 2004 Minnesota study, and then you referenced kind of in passing the states that in fact have gone to pooled plans. And my question is, are we taking that study data in Michigan and Minnesota and interpolating that into savings for Oregon, or did you base it on the actual performance as opposed to study performance?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morse, I appreciate the fact that you're asking me this question for a second time, and I've had a chance to reflect on it since our last meeting. We looked at the methodology of that of those studies to see whether we agreed with how they approached the issue. And in deeming those studies to be accurate in their evaluation, we applied those that methodology to the costs in the Oregon marketplace, focusing on the administrative load that goes into those plans. So we're not really addressing claims here. We are addressing the basic administrative costs. And those don't require a large, elaborate study because they are basic to all plans. Did I do a better job this time?
Yes and no. I follow up.
Sure.
The Minnesota study was done in 2004. This is 2007. Did Minnesota actually achieve the expected savings that they projected in their study?
Chairman and members, Minnesota did not implement this. The study made the recommendation. It is a sound study. The political will didn't act on it. In my 30-some years of experience, the basic aspects or the basic components of administering a plan haven't changed. They have been much more constant than the other technologies or measures of creating networks, of creating case management, of creating medical management. The fundamentals of a group insurance product include basic administrative charges and pooling of large, unpredictable claims and compensation for representing those. So they're not subject to the high level of scrutiny from the standpoint of are they different in one state than they are in the other than the level of which is being paid. The components and the distribution are pretty consistent.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take two more questions for Mr. Bowen.
I will yield. I think Senator Morse has covered the area that I was interested in exploring.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Morgan. Was there another question over here?
I'll yield also for the same reason.
Okay. Representative Jensen.
Thank you. You can't provide us, as I am hearing you, with actual data from Minnesota because Minnesota chose not to implement the plan. And you referred to this as political, and of course anything that happens here is political. So that would seem obvious, but can you show us any savings from other states that may tend to substantiate the conclusions that other states who have implemented statewide pooling, as we're proposing here, that would tend to verify the conclusions that are being reached by your analysis and the study in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we confined our research to evaluating the methodology of the study and our experience in the industry as to whether these are reasonable factions and to forecast what we thought the implication was for the state. I don't bring with me today a specific example of overall savings. We were asked to review the methodology.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. All right, Mr. Brown, thank you very much for being concise. We really appreciate you taking the time out to come here today. And now I'm going to call up, and I'm not sure. It seemed like we got all three of you were going to come up. Okay, Kevin McCann, Ron Wilson, and John Peterson. And then
That's going to be followed by James Sager, and then we're going to go to those who are, have come from more than 100 miles. So.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Kevin McCann. I'm the executive director of the Oregon School Boards Association. I'm also the administrator of the OSBA Health Insurance Trust. With me today are John Peterson, who's a board member from the Hillsborough School District and serves as a trustee on our Health Insurance Trust, and also Ron Wilson, who's the associate executive director for OSBA. OSBA has been in this business for about 40 years. Serving community colleges, ESDs, and K-12 school districts across the state. We have 37,000 employees in our pool and about 90,000 people when you include family members and others that receive benefits. OSBA, I want to tell you right out of the chute, has a program that's been very successful, and when it was set up 40 years ago, it included an endorsement fee. And I know this, some people are troubled by this, so I want to answer it right up front. The endorsement fee is currently 0.8%, and the money that goes from this program, from the Health Insurance Trust to the Oregon School Boards Association, is used, plowed right back into services, direct, high-quality, low-cost services for local school districts. Our members think it's a great value and a great program. We strongly oppose Senate Bill 426 and will provide some evidence as to why. We believe that, in fact, there is a great danger of this costing school districts more, not less, at a time when they can not afford to be absorbing more costs. As you may have picked up in the previous testimony, the bill and its foundation rely on examples from other states that are not well earmarked or benchmarked in Oregon. They do not use Oregon data and are not implemented. You'll hear a little bit more about those. We think that this will eliminate important community-based decision-making in some cases. It will reduce or even eliminate some important checks and balances that are provided by marketplace competition. And this bill does not provide for attacking the cost drivers in health insurance today. That we're all, I think everybody in this room is in agreement. We've got to get after those cost drivers somehow. We don't believe this is the right vehicle. I want to clarify one other point about OSBA's position. You're hearing about studies, whose numbers are right, whose numbers are wrong. This is an extremely complex field of business, health insurance is. We want what's best for school district, which is high quality, low cost, or reasonable cost health insurance, affordable insurance for employees. We have always supported an unbiased study from somebody outside. We want actual digging into the data. You can't determine it by just looking at OSBA's plan. You can't determine it by looking at other states. The only way to understand this extremely complex business is to really take an in-depth look. And the reason I emphasize this so strongly is that you're in the position, as our legislature in Oregon, to make policy decisions. This is a very far-reaching policy choice that you need to make. And none of us, you or us, can afford a mistake in this. The stakes are too high, and it's our teachers, our school employees, our communities, and our kids that pay the price. So I'd like to now turn it over to John Peterson from the Hillsborough School Board.
We're a board of trustees.
For the record, if you could just say your name, and it seems
John Peterson from the Hillsborough School Board, and I'm with you. One of the trustees of the OSBA Health Insurance Trust. We are a body of five trustees. three of us are school board members, Craig Pruitt from Talent, and Tom Bennett from the Coos Bay, and myself from Hillsboro. Craig Rosser is another member. He is a school superintendent, and Jennifer Heiss is a school business manager. We comprise the five trustees of this trust. When we get together and we meet and to go over how we're going to comprise our plans, how they're going to be priced, we look at this from the angles, school board members, superintendents, school managers, and all aspects of the issue. Our charge by our trust is basically only one: to provide the best insurance coverage that we can for our members for the lowest possible cost that we can for our members, and that really is the sole trust and fiduciary responsibility we have. We meet on a regular basis. We adjust the plans that are offered. We recently modified plans to offer a co-pay plan that other insurers were offering. We listen to what we're being told by the members, by the superintendents, by the business managers around the state. What is it that the employees want? What is it that they are demanding as coverage for themselves and their families? And we then tailor our plans to meet those demands as best we can, and to keep our costs competitive while still maintaining the expectations of the insureds and the highest level of coverage possible. And we do this, of course, it's a competitive market. All the school districts and all the superintendents out there want to get the best buy that they can for the buck. They don't have to purchase insurance through the OSBA trust. In Hillsboro, for example, we can purchase insurance from Providence, from Kaiser, from LifeWise, from OSBA, from Regents Direct, as Beaverton does. There are many options out there, and it's the competition. Competition not only defines the coverage that we offer, but also defines the competitive level of the premiums. And it is extremely important to us that this competition remain there. We believe this is what has permitted us to provide a product for a very competitive price for our members. Should also note that we do everything in our power to go beyond just providing the insurance, but also to identify other problems that do exist in insurance, one of which is that about 10% of your insureds under your plans represent about 80 to 90% of your claims cost. In order to tackle that problem, at least for those that insure through us, we have contracted with an organization called Advocare to get up front, to be proactive, to get nursing help for diabetics that need help with their diet, that need help monitoring insulin, their insulin levels. We, with the permission of the insureds, put them in contact with their physicians. And it's that kind of program that we offer to our members as well. We believe that the competition in the market amongst the carriers that will bid on this type of coverage has permitted us to deliver a very quality product.
Now I'd like to turn over to Ron Wilson.
Good afternoon. My name is Ron Wilson. I'm the Associate Executive Director at the Oregon School Boards Association. And given some of the time limitations, let me get right to one of the bottom lines that we have. We're, in a sense, talking about risk. When we look at the model that Senate Bill 426 creates, that model is virtually identical to PEP. When we compare our costs to PEP, we see an alarming difference, where PEP's rates are as much as 220% for a single employee with a similar coverage of a preferred provider. When we extrapolate that across the whole state and those that are in our pool, we're looking at a possible increase of $99 million. On the other side of the balance sheet is what we've heard this morning from Mr. Brown, that looking at the methodology in other states, we could apply those savings. But given that the risk that is a possibility, I took the time to start to look into what some of those other studies said. Both, not only the Minnesota study, but the Michigan study has never been implemented. The Pennsylvania study has never been implemented. The Iowa study has never been implemented. And let's take a little bit closer look at the Michigan study. The Michigan study, because it hasn't been implemented, we don't really know whether those assumptions and the conclusions have any validation at all, or if they're even tested. But let's look at where that 6.7% savings is coming from. We've heard that that's going to come from administrative costs. When you look at the study itself, it says that the savings are going to come from three different areas. The first area is that they move from a fully insured program to a self-insurance program, that they might save up to 2.6%. There's nothing in Senate Bill 426 that talks about self-insurance. And I know a few years ago, PEB considered self-insurance, but didn't have the reserves to be able to do it. That's 2.6%. Their administrative savings of that 6.3% was only 0.11%. The remaining percentage, 2.44%, was for carving out prescription drug and medical equipment coverage, and finally a 1.5% came from eligibility management. None of these issues are discussed in Senate Bill 426. Now, sometimes I have a tendency to look at things a little simply. If we're talking about a potential of 6% savings, well, what are our administrative costs? Administrative costs for PEP are about 8%. Administrative costs for the OSBA pool are 7.78%. Very close. 6% savings, that only leaves 2%. Actually, it's less than 2%. Does that make sense? These are the conclusions that we're coming to, that in order to really analyze this complex topic, we need to have a thorough, impartial, unbiased actuarial study. I want to also point out one other thing, because I know I'm running out of time. Not every study in other states have led to the conclusion that a statewide pool is the way to go. The most recent is from Ohio, coming out just 2 weeks ago, January 31st, 2007. The recommendation was not to go to statewide pooling, but to go to a series of regional pools to take advantage of the market conditions. I can point to you to our handout on page 2, where the board in that particular state did not specifically recommend one statewide purchasing pool, but rather they favored market-driven health plan sponsors that meet best practice standards with transparency of outcomes and favors support of policies and programs that motivate innovation. So at the very least, this issue, if for no other reason than the possibility of a huge risk, deserves some thorough and competent study. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson, and all three of you. And Chair's prerogative, I'd like to ask the first two questions, if I may. Mr. Wilson and Mr. McCann, both of you have called into question the credibility or the objectivity of Watson Wyatt, and I'm not a shareholder of Watson Wyatt, a public corporation or anything. I'm just wondering on what basis you call their credibility into question. Why don't I just let you respond to that one, and then I have another question.
Okay, let me take that. I'm not calling into question the credibility of Watson Wyatt. We haven't worked with them directly, but as a firm, I'm not calling. I want to be real clear about that. I think what they've done is, as was expressed, is they looked at the methodology for these other states and how they did their study and said, if we take that methodology and apply it to Oregon, does that work? That might be a very cursory, surface level, appropriate thing to do. But that this, what I'm trying to emphasize is this business is so highly complex with many carriers and many organizations involved in it to make, I think Watson Wyatt would agree, to make a simplistic leap is not appropriate by anybody who's involved in this.
Is that sufficient? Okay. Yes. All right. And I appreciate that And for a firm that I think probably rests their reputation on being objective, I guess when the two of you said we need an objective study, for me, that's the conclusion that I would come to, would be that you're calling into question their professionalism. So that's why I asked the question, but I appreciate the response. My second question is, you know, as policymakers, you know, everyone here wants the school, you know, more money to go into the classrooms and to minimize the cost of health care, yet keeping good quality for employees. I mean, that's what everyone wants. So as a policymaker, when I look at this, in addition to looking at the new proposal, I look at the status quo. So I wonder if you could, what are the percentage increases in terms of the status quo, let's say maybe in the last sort of 5 to 10 years, the health care cost increases that school districts have had to absorb?
Well, I can tell you in the last renewal for the OSBA trust, the increase was 1.4%. It's a difficult question to answer because not all school districts are in our pool. There are many that are in others and some self-insured and so forth. I don't know. We are not privy to the rate increases of those others. And even the OEA choice plans, I don't know what those cost increases have been. And it can vary from pool to pool fairly dramatically. So it's in fact a piece of information that you ought to have, and it ought to be studied very carefully. So that it's numbers we all agree on and think are real valid.
Yeah, Mr. Wilson, I like your philosophy of the simple, so to me this seems like it's complicated, but it's also... Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, yes, you're absolutely correct. The we've all been, I suppose you could say, the victims of skyrocketing healthcare costs. And the philosophy that our trust has taken has been really to try to attack the cost drivers that are behind that. But I think I can provide you with a little bit of data on differential rate increases. If you would go to page 7 of our handout, at the very bottom, it provides some overall rate comparisons for the average monthly premium cost per employee. And also we have some comparative figures there to PEB. You'll notice a couple of blanks for 05-06 and 06-07 for PEB. I just don't have access to those numbers. But you can see that, yes, we have had an increase in healthcare costs. Since 2000, it's not something that I think anybody is very comfortable with, which is, I suppose, another reason that we do believe that the competitive marketplace helps us in this regard. If we're not having a competitive product, people are not going to be joining our pool. They're not going to be looking at our product. There are a number of other products and plans available throughout the state. Secondly, is that when I look at the level of increases, we generally are below pretty much everybody else. We very very much prize efficiency and value for dollar in our program. And we hopefully we've been able to achieve some of those goals because our number of employees, number of school districts in our pool has been growing.
Thank you. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to see you again, gentlemen. I was looking through my notes from our hearing on February 1st, and I didn't see this question asked, so I'm going to ask it today. How many times has Oregon School Boards Association gone out to bid on another insurance carrier?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, we have not gone out to bid recently, and the dynamics of our pool are that it's a statewide pool, and there is one carrier in Oregon who can deliver on a statewide basis, and that's Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. There isn't another carrier that apparently wants to come into the marketplace because if they, and by that I mean a statewide carrier. We have done some preliminary investigations and asked questions of other carriers in Oregon to see if they can provide a truly pooled statewide pool and not regional that give some districts advantages over others, and they're unwilling to do it. The carriers that are in Oregon now simply say, we can't handle a statewide pool.
Mr. Chair, if I can follow that, it sort of defeats your purpose when you have a captive audience. Blue Cross Blue Shield, it seems to me, can charge you pretty much anything you want, because that seems to be the only carrier that you're asking bids from. So I'm not sure. Does this enhance or stifle the competition that you see?
By this, do you mean Senate Bill 426?
No.
This model?
I mean your current status quo, the way that you deliver insurance.
Where the competition takes place is that school districts have the option to go, many of them, not everyone, many of them have the option to go someplace else. Mr. Peterson suggested Hillsborough. They could go someplace else. So we have to be competitive, or they will go someplace else. And in fact, we have had districts come in and out of our pool. And we sort of provide a safe harbor. But it's a safe harbor at a very great value.
I believe that's what we're expecting with Senator 426.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't, Mr. Wilson, I don't know if you wanted to jump in on that last. I don't want to go up on another area before.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, just to, again, point out some data, also looking at our handout on page 7, there is a comparison of administrative costs. One of the aspects that Senator Walker is bringing up is, well, how are we ensured that essentially the negotiations with our carrier is effective? One of the ways to look at that is to look at what those retention percentages are. As you can see under the OSBA Trust, we actually have a very low retention rate of 6.14% compared to, say, PREPED of 6.6. That plus the competitive marketplace that Mr. McCann has been discussing, I think, helps to keep our pencils sharp.
Thank you very much. Okay, and then Senator Decker, give me the last question.
Sorry, I was yielding on my question to shouldn't have done it. Mr. Chair, thank you. One of the things that I've lamented, and Senator Morris and I were talking before the hearing about the politicization of this issue. This is obviously not a new issue to any of us for the last 5 years. And at the outset of this discussion, I recall, and the good representative from Myrtle Creek was at least a real leader in taking the politics out of this and really gathering a group of legislators and interested parties, I think, across the board together. And somehow, some way, the work that was done was, I think, purely numbers-based at that point. And really, I had no clue who fell on which side. I've certainly learned in the last couple of years who fell where in this debate. But one of the things that has troubled me, and I'd like to give OSBA a great deal of credit, at least lately, that they have not chosen to do this, but I've felt like, at least in the past, that they have, or OSBA has politicized this. And one thing I see in the documents today that does give me a little bit of pause is that this is characterized, and it's done by district, as a mandatory state government-run health insurance pool. I would contend that the OSBA pool, unless you have private dollars somewhere pushing that pool, I could characterize the OSBA pool as a government-run pool. But perhaps I'm incorrect that OSBA is not a government-run pool, or government dollars aren't the sole driver of the pool.
Chair Galizio, Senator Deckert, let me simply answer by stating that in statute, OSBA is considered an organization of school boards from across the state, locally elected school boards. So we can draw whatever conclusions we want, but that's what the organization is. And may I say, I appreciate your comments. We don't want to politicize. This is too important for all of us to be overly political about it.
Mr. Chair, I would completely agree. And like I said, other than this one that certainly grabbed my attention, I would give OSBA such higher marks on how they've approached this. It definitely seems to be a very factual-based conversation. The one other question that I have, because OSBA pool has done, a good job in the past few years at keeping rates reasonable, and students have benefited from that, and teachers have benefited from that, and we've all benefited from that. Have you used reserves at all to keep those rates lower than they otherwise would have been?
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckert, no. Our reserves have continued to grow as the premium level has grown.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so Senator Devlin has promised he's just going to ask for some more written material.
Okay.
And then I'm going to call up, go ahead, Senator Devlin.
My request actually is, you've distributed materials to a lot of the offices comparing costs, and you've compared those solely on the region's PPO program in terms of what that costs at different levels. PEB actually offers 10 different programs through several different carriers. Can you give me a comparison to each of those compared to yours? Because those are competitive offers that have been made by other firms that may serve smaller areas of the state in some cases. But could you do me a comparison to those other plans that are out there? Because you chose the highest cost plan to do your comparison with, rather than any of the other plans.
We'll get much more data. The reason we did that is those are the two closest plans to compare, and they have 11, we have 4. So we'll get you some more information to help clarify that.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. We're going to hold the question. He's a freshman. All right, thank you very much, Mr. McCann, Mr. Wilson, and Mr. Peterson. I really appreciate it. I'm going to get that later. I'm going to get it. Thank you very much. I'm going to call up James Sager, the Governor's Education and Workforce Advisory, and then on deck, if I could use a baseball metaphor, Lance Colley from Roseburg Schools, Chris Davidson, and Bob Reese, our 100-mile-plus visitors and testifiers. You will follow Mr. Sager. So,
thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm James Sager from the Governor's Office. I know that you want us to be brief now, so I'll try to stay very focused. The Governor has made it clear over the past 4 years that he wants to help look at driving efficiencies in our education system and help driving down costs of especially items that school districts have not had direct control over. Efficiencies around, whether it be consolidating central office business functions or costs such as PERS and the insurance, runaway insurance costs. With your help, you and the Governor took on the PERS issue, and we believe we have that under control. The other issue that's still out there is this runaway insurance. In this plan, the Governor feels that it is time that we bring the state's strength to bear to help bring this cost under control. We have this runaway insurance plan. The Governor, and I'm sorry, Senator Deckert, I should have your name in my official testimony because you've done so much as well as others. Plan provides answers so that we can, in fact, provide education employees with quality health insurance at a reasonable price in all corners of the state. It will mean that we can negotiate the best price, because right now we can't afford to continue the status quo. We know that that is not working. We have several reviews of Oregon-specific facts from actuarial firms in a number of other states. You've heard that mentioned here today, including a letter that I have from May 28, 2003, from the Oregon School Boards Association, that indicated that if everyone were to join their pool, there would be about a $77 million savings at that point in time. So there's a recognition that there is a larger savings that can be captured here, and that savings does not include the disendorsement fee that you've heard comments about. All of the reviews, whether the states have chosen to implement them or not. All of these reviews indicate that we can save at a minimum 5% on those administrative costs. We're not talking about plan design. We're talking about the administrative costs under the kind of approach that Senate Bill 426 provides. And so if I could, and again, I appreciate the fact not having this politicized, but I have to compare against OSBA's analysis. Their plan, as was mentioned, takes the closest to the PEB Blue Cross plan and uses the PEB premium as if that is what would be in place. There are a number of problems with that, since 426 makes it very clear that no district will be charged at a higher rate than they pay at the time of conversion, and they will have a package design at least comparable to the package design that they have, so that there's no loss for the districts. The 426 calls for a menu of options to be selected by the district in conjunction with their local collective bargaining agents, so that in fact there is this relationship and it's going to be a menu of options. Another mistake is that Senate Bill 426 makes it clear that the OEB board does not interfere in collective bargaining. There's implication that, in fact, because state employees currently receive their insurance totally covered, that somehow is going to be translated onto the school districts. We have 92% of our school districts have a cost-sharing arrangement already. That continues to occur because this does not impact collective bargaining at that level. 426 also makes it clear that we invite regional consortiums to bid. We want to look at, and we have been in conversation with many local or regional providers who have said they would like to be able to join a consortium where in their area they are able to bring their resources to bear for their local communities and not have to be a statewide provider. So it is a different approach to trying to bring the best services to the local communities, because what is available in Portland or Salem is clearly not available in Coos Bay and other parts of the state. The OSBA analysis also fails to call out the impact of things like their required $100 deductible. They try to compare that, again, in plan design to PEB and other management components that are found in PEB. It does not appear to include the mental health parity that is required by the legislature and any mention of cost sharing within prescription drugs. So I bring these things out just because, to me, and I'm sorry, I'm biased on this because I'm here supporting it, but to me the focus has to be looking at professional organizations, actuaries, who have looked at the comparable kind of research. I guess I want to close with, thank you. I want to close with this because I appreciate Senator Deckard's question, because I brought it up before too and you've heard the governor say it. No business with 200 separate entities out there would allow their subsidiaries to negotiate their own plans and then send the bill to the corporate office and say pay it. And that is the relationship that we have right now in this state. The state of Oregon can bring its strength to bear to make sure that as an enterprise we're able to drive the best cost and best competition for that book of work for all school districts and all education plans. So with that, I'll stop. Thank you.
Thank you. How about a question from Representative Morgan?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Sager. I'm just referring to comments that you made in the beginning of your statement about the no district will be having to pay more or have different coverage than they had before they came into the pool. And I'm referring to the bill. It's Section 17 on page 8, and it's subsection 2, and it says the board shall offer a range of benefit plans designed sufficient to ensure that when the benefit plans are first provided by the board to a district, the district and the district employees can choose benefit plans that are comparable in design to and are not more expensive than the comparable costs of the benefit plans that the district provided immediately before the purchase of the benefits. What does it mean that the when benefit plans are first provided?
Chair DeLisa, Representative Morgan, thank you for that question. It is to make it clear, if you think back 4 years ago when we started this conversation, there was a concern that a plan would be put in place, and we'd have winners and losers of school districts. So that school districts that had maybe a very small offering to their employees would find that their costs would go up because now they have to buy this Cadillac plan. And so we're making it clear that that will not be the case. In fact, the mandate to the board is you must have a menu that would meet that those variety of needs. So that is in the first step. And the reason it's in the first step is very simple. None of us know, no school district knows a year from now what their charge is going to be. And in fact, the way that things have changed over the year, and it doesn't matter if it's the OEA Choice Trust Group or OSBA plan or direct rights with insurance rates, the plan designs and things change over time. I remember years ago, I think I was in the gold book, and then I went to the blue book, and then the red book, and I mean, you know, they change because there are decisions made over time. So this isn't a guarantee into perpetuity that everything would stay the same, but because the employers and the employees, with the oversight of the legislature, is involved in designing these plans, and the focus is to provide high quality at the best price and benefit school districts, that remains the focus. And so it is to guarantee that that transition does not cost school districts any money, that they don't lose from this transition.
So could I have a follow-up?
Sure, absolutely.
So correct me if I'm not understanding what you're telling me, but what I think I hear you say is that for the first year of OWEB, the number of plans that will be offered will be the sum of the number of plans that are available to the districts before they join, taking into effect that ones districts that have plans that are identical, that'll all become, so there'll be a large number of plans in the first over the first section of transition as the districts transition into the pool. That this is going to be something that goes on for however many years it takes for all the districts to transition into the pool. Am I getting the picture here?
Chairman Lisa, Representative Morgan, that is one way to describe it. Yes, there is going to have to be a menu of options that every district's going to have to be able to see, you know, kind of a connection to that menu, that in fact the board has looked at the variety of needs out there and current conditions to make sure that they meet those needs and conditions during this transition time.
So can I just continue with this then? So from that, is it safe to assume that in the first years of this program, the potential for administrative savings are somewhat diminished because of the complexity of administering this broad variety of plans?
Chair Galizia and Representative Morgan, not being an expert on this, I can't answer from
no
that perspective,
there.
But I can answer from this because I've asked that similar question to the people that have looked at this. And again, the administrative savings is viewed inside of that, that the belief is that there is still that administrative savings, that we can do it by the size and the scope of this work. The administrative savings isn't just from the fact that you have a single plan, and that's all that you have to do. There are so many other factors that go into calculating what those savings are, as simple as not having to pay commissions to go out and try to negotiate a plan with some other provider. That's captured inside the pooling.
Okay, can I ask
this is the last one.
Okay, but in it seems to me, though, that this is an area of data that is quantifiable, that there are things in here that are causing us problems because we can't quantify what's going to happen after that initial phase. But has there been any attempt to capture what the actual administrative savings is going to be during the implementation phase of this? Is there any hard data on that?
Representative Belizio, Representative Morgan, the only hard data is the analysis that we shared with you today, which showed the lower savings in the first few years and then building up, both because of the ramping up of the number of lives being included in there and thus the building savings because you have the cost spread out over a larger size.
But no impact of the cost of offering a large diversity of plans. That wasn't part of the
The scope of the analysis was to try and look at the scope of Senate Bill 426.
Thank you.
Okay, so I
I'm going to say, Ms. James Sager, thank you very much. You. And then we have people from South Umpqua, Pendleton, so a really rapid-fire question. I know, you're people. All right, Representative Jensen.
Just very quickly, do you have any idea of how many different types of plans you will have to have in the first year of operation?
Chairman Elizio, Representative Jensen, I don't off the top of my head. No, I could look into
Thank
that,
you.
Though.
So that was quick. I'm sorry.
All right, Representative Edwards, because I was so rude before, you get a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sager, in preparation for this hearing, I received a memo from the OSBA to Governor Kulongoski dated May 28, 2003.
Correct.
In this memo, it states that a statewide mandatory pool could save $74 million annually if everyone was brought into the OSBA plan and paid its royalties. So what, if any, efficiencies would be available to the OSBA that would not be available to the beneficiaries of this plan as proposed in the Senate bill?
Chair Luzio, Representative Edwards, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything that would be available that wouldn't be, and that it is our contention that there may be some items that would be available to the new board that aren't currently accessed by that plan.
Okay, for absolute certainty, thank you very much, Jim Sager. Okay, Mr. Reese, Mr. Davidson, and Mr. Colley, I'm going to call the three of you. And we really appreciate your patience, and we appreciate the fact that you took time to come out today and probably give you a little bit more time than other folks. So thank you again for your patience, and please state your name for the record. And
thank you, Chairman Galizio and members of the committee. I'm Bob Reese. I'm the Director of Business Services for the Pendleton School District. On Monday, our school board adopted a resolution opposing Senate Bill 426. And we did that after a fairly detailed study where we attempted to, employee by employee, match what we're paying now under the OSBA plan with the PEP plan. And what we found in that is that the cost to our employees would increase about $527,000 per year. The cost to our retirees, in the case of our retirees, the almost all retirees pay the entire insurance premium. We pay them a stipend, but that's not connected to the insurance premium at all. Their cost would go up $237,000. So we have a total of about $750,000. And we use the PEP model because that's the only model that's out there for us to compare to. That's the only known that we have, and it's the one that correlates most directly to the legislation that we now have. The cost to our retirees would be about $3,000 per year. To our employees, it would be about $2,000 per year because right now we have a cap, so all that cost, if it happened, would be passed on to them. Should it come back to the school district for any reason, over the last 7 years, because of funding levels and declining enrollment, we have reduced our staff 25%, over 90 positions, 55 teaching positions. We don't have funds to make up that difference. So what we see is we're heading into a major unknown here, and that before this legislation would move forward, we would ask that an actuarial study for the state of Oregon would be completed, so we had some kind of model came out with some sort of rate structure that we could compare ourselves to, because if we miss on this, if it does turn out to be more closely related to where PEB is today, then it's going to be a huge negative financial impact on our school district, and I think many school districts. So we ask you to either not adopt it, or if you were inclined that direction, to have that actuarial study done for the state of Oregon only. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reese.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lance Colley. I'm the Chief Operations Officer at Rosebud Public Schools, and I'd like to say thank you for this opportunity. I've been in public finance now for over 20 years, and one of my primary responsibilities has been to negotiate and secure insurance contracts over time. Nothing in Senate Bill 426 guarantees us savings. Right now, what Senate Bill 426 says is that it will not cost us more. What we're doing today doesn't cost us more. It has been insinuated that there will be significant savings and that can be put back into the classroom. Currently, school districts in Oregon, ours included, pay about 90% of the premium cost, which means in order to put money back in the classroom, this plan or another plan would have to save in excess of 10% of the premium cost before you save any real dollars that the state or our local districts are providing. I think that's very important because one of the components of this has been that we can put more money in the classroom. I do not see any of the actuarial studies saying that we'll save more than 10% of the premium dollars. While that might save some of our employees and some districts money, which is wonderful, I just want to tell you it's not going to put money back in the classroom. As was stated earlier, most of the actuarial studies have been based on other studies that were not implemented. I don't think that that's reliable data for Oregon. As a public entity today, we currently do contract with OSBA for our medical insurance. We also contract with OEA Choice for our dental vision, and we contract directly with a private company for our long-term disability, life insurance, and AD&D, which has allowed us to competitively market our employees to different carriers so that we could get the best cost for our employees. Between Chris and I, we represent over 50% of the school district employees in Douglas County, and this program, the way we have it structured and the way that we can go out and competitively select our carriers has been the most efficient way for us to provide cost-effective coverage for our employees. One of the other things that I'd like to point out, when SB 426 was put in to bill format, one of the things in there is that it allows for the state to create a bureaucracy that would allow for and actually require 2% of the premium cost on a monthly basis to go to pay just for the state agency that would run it. And while I certainly agree with Senator Decker that the trust that we belong to now is a government-run trust, it's a voluntary government-run trust, not a mandatory one, and their costs are significantly lower than what is required in this bill, which would take 2% of our premium cost off the top to run the agency. So with that, I'll pass it on to Mr. Davidson. I have handed out some written testimony that covers many of the points that were covered before and a couple others.
We have received that, Mr. Colley. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Chris Davidson. I'm the Director of Fiscal Services for South Umpqua School District. Like the other gentleman up here, this is a very important issue for us. $2 million just about of our general fund goes to health insurance every year. That's about 15% of our expenditures. So this is very significant for us. You know, obviously anything that could save us money we're very much interested in. However, there's a number of provisions within this bill that do not put anywhere towards cost savings for us. There's a provision in this bill that says that the board can determine who is eligible for insurance half-time or even less than that at their discretion. Currently, we only insure three-quarter-time employees. If we had to add just half-time employees to that, that's an additional 38 employees my district would have to pay insurance on. If we even pay just half their premium, that's $180,000 this year alone. That increases my costs, not decreases my costs. Another provision in this bill also allows for the coverage of domestic partners. Currently, we only cover same-sex domestic partners as required by law. There's no definition of what a domestic partner is. We could have people with on-again, off-again relationships. We'd be continually adding people to our plans, not knowing if they're still in the household, if the relationship is still ongoing or not, and then taking them back off again, unable to budget our costs and even have an idea of where we were going in the future. The Senate bill also does say that there will be numerous choices available to us. However, the bill also states that those choices do not have to be available in every county. If PED is an example of what my county can look forward to, we'll have one choice. That's not choice, and that is in no way going to save us money. If we cannot go out and shop for the best option for ourselves, if we cannot sit down at the table and bargain what our coverage levels will be and how much we will pay of that, if our hands are tied on that, there is no way that Senate Bill 426 can save us money, put money back in the classroom, and do more for kids. So that is all I have to add on that. Thank you very much for allowing us time today.
Thank you very much. Maybe we have a quick question, or we've been really... Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. So now we have a challenge, so I need the help of all of you, because I've done a lousy time of managing time. So, although I would say we started a little later than I anticipated, but... some of you know one another, so first I'm going to start with supporters, people who signed up to support the bill, and I'm going to ask if more than one of you at a time can come up. So, there are more people who oppose the bill today, so keep that in mind. So first I'm going to go to those, first I'll do a supporter, then I'll go to a group in opposition. So the first supporter that I see is Tricia Smith from... the Oregon School Employees Association. I also then see Rob Wagner's name, and maybe they can both come up. And then I also have Alan, and I'm not reading the name. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Did you just say that? Are you Alan Brink?
No,
you're not. Okay, where did that come from? Oh, okay. But, all right. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Very quickly, my name is Tricia Smith. Mm-hmm. I represent the 20,000 members of Oregon School Employees Association working in K-12 districts and ESDs and other educational providers across the state. With me today is one of our members, Patrick Munyon, who will provide the bulk of our testimony. I will tell you that in addition to our testimony, I was asked by Betty McChesney House, the State Public Policy Chair for American Association of University Women, to please submit their testimony. They could not be here today, so I provided it to your clerk, and he will be handing it out. And with that, Mr. Munyon will proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Patrick Munyon. I'm a long-term member of the Oregon School Employees Association and a classified employee with Eugene School District. I appreciate you allowing me to speak briefly today in favor of Senate Bill 426. I've been with Eugene School District for nearly 28 years. For around 15 of those years, I've been involved with the district's Joint Labor Management Committee, which manages our insurance benefits. For about the past 5 years, I've worked in the position of Classified Benefits Coordinator. Until recently, our classified group of about 900 employees purchased health insurance independently. Our premiums were based on our own experience. Our small group was exposed to significant increases in premiums when large medical claims were combined with the burden of medical inflation. For example, in 2001, our renewal rate reflected an increase of over 40%. Needless to say, that was one of the years when we slashed benefits and offloaded costs onto the shoulders of our employees. Last October, our classified group joined a voluntary pool. It was a financial decision to take advantage of the group buying power and the smoothing of risk associated with large claims in a small group. But it's not enough to save our employees from the terrible choices they must too often make between providing health care for their families or a paycheck that's sufficient to meet their housing and other basic needs. Classified employees are especially vulnerable to insurance cost increases. Because of our lower wages, many classified workers are forced to live from paycheck to paycheck. As health insurance costs have skyrocketed and school budgets have decreased, classified and other school employees are being asked to shoulder most of the increased costs. This cost shifting comes in several forms. Employer caps force employees to pick up more of the premium as a monthly expense, reducing their net income. In addition, higher deductible levels, higher co-payments, and higher out-of-pocket cost maximums have hit us hard. Usually the ones who can least afford these increases are those people who are in very ill health. These added financial burdens come at the worst possible time for them. In my district, it's the husband who ran up his credit card debt to pay deductibles, co-insurance, and prescription co-pays because his wife has cancer. It's the employee who had the bad timing of surgery in December, then required additional surgery early into the new calendar year, thus having to pay over $6,000 in out-of-pocket expenses. Our members simply do not have the financial resources to absorb these costs. More often, classified employees are forced to make tough choices as a result of the increasing burden of health insurance costs. Recently, a single mother who only works part-time was hoping to get a promotion that would provide her with more hours. Then I explained to her all the health benefit costs. She did the math and found that after paying her share of the premium, medical deductibles, and prescription co-payments of our medical plan, she'd actually lose money by working more. She found out that she and her family are better off if she didn't take that promotion. Instead, she kept her two children on the Oregon health plan and has no insurance for herself. Senate Bill 426 would provide maximum savings for our district and employees. Pooling nearly all school employees would provide greater economy of scale, reduce administrative costs, and increase group buying power. This pool would be considerably larger than what's available today and would be better able to absorb large claims. The achieved result would be lower rates and an end to the roller coaster ride that smaller groups have when large claims surface. I believe some will oppose this bill out of self-interest because they do profit from the status quo. You may also hear from school district employees who fear what change may bring to their individual district. Some school districts may simply be having a good year of claims experience, and change doesn't look good for them this year. However, when we look at the collective, long-term ability to afford medical insurance, this bill is in the best interest of the school districts, the employees, and ultimately the taxpayers of Oregon. We hope you'll pass Senate Bill 426 into law this session. Classified employees simply can't afford to wait any longer to reduce the cost of our health care. And I thank you for your time and attention to this issue.
Thank you. Before Mr. Wagner begins, next up, is Carolyn Ortman here? Okay, Ms. Ortman, and I have Jason, is it Durante?
Close enough.
Okay, apologies. Would you mind coming up at the same time as Ms. Ortman? Okay. And then also, those of you that I have other people who have signed up who I see around the building quite often, which is fantastic, and you're welcome to testify, but keep in mind that next Tuesday, when we have a work session on this bill, there will also be a 45-minute time block to take more testimony. So, okay, Mr. Wagner.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll keep my testimony very limited. Rob Wagner, representing the American Federation of Teachers Oregon. We have over 11,000 members, and 2,500 of those members are K-12 classified employees in Hillsborough, Portland, Scappoose, and John Day. And this measure has won deep support from our membership. And in fact, when the resolution was taken before our members several years ago, not one single member from in our General Assembly stood up and actually opposed this concept. And I think that the reasons why, in terms of just health insurance savings pools making sense to folks, and just echoing some of the comments that you've heard from the person from Pendleton and from Mr. McCann and Mr. Sager commenting on who's bearing the brunt of the increases in health insurance premiums over the last 15 years, there's been a massive shift on to employees of school districts through cost-sharing arrangements. And if you actually go on the Oregon School Boards Association website, at least it was up there when we first started talking about this bill in 2003, they had the history of the different districts that have implemented caps. And now, as you heard from Mr. Sager, I think it's almost universal that in our members' contracts that there are caps. So why would our folks who are paying more and more out of pocket be interested in doing this? It's because they have a vested interest in making sure that we're doing everything to increase and maximize the accountability and the efficiencies of providing health insurance benefit options to all our members in Oregon. We've heard about the common sense in terms of large businesses, Nike, Intel, and Senator Deckard's testimony. Even President Bush was talking about pooling, allowing small businesses to pool in order to achieve efficiencies. If you look at prescription drugs, the Veterans Administration, and what you're able to do with cost savings with large pools. If you look at the Oregon prescription bulk purchasing plan that was immensely popular with the voters this last election cycle. And then also, as most of you know, because I've talked with you individually about this, the majority of our members in Oregon are higher education faculty and classified employees and community colleges and university level. And I found this from the Chronicle of Higher Education. I wanted to read it. It's from January 27th of 2007, and it's interesting because Oregon's independent colleges, Linfield, Pacific, George Fox, Willamette, Lewis and Clark, Reed, actually just implemented a pooling consortium. And I just wanted to read this quote, and then it'll complete my testimony. Quote, cutting out the middlemen seemed like a no-brainer. A consortium would provide pooled resources, shared risks, greater institutional control, and collective buying power. So with that, I'll just say that AFT members really encourage your support for Senate Bill 426. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, Mr. Wagner, Mr. Munyon, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Carolyn Ortman and Jason Theron.
So, how about you'll go on the next?
Okay.
Apologize.
I'm a member of our Education Excellence Task Force.
State your name for the record, please.
My name is Carolyn Ortman. Dear Chair and members of this community and this committee, I am currently the chair of the Hillsborough School Board. I am a past president of the Oregon School Board Association, and I currently serve on the board of directors for the National School Board Association. But today I'm here to talk to you about Senate Bill 426 and the implications and impacts that that would have on the Hillsborough School District. And in the interest of time, I'm only going to give 2 points because you can read. I want to let you know I am a locally elected school board member. I am not a part of some bigger corporation, and I am an independent, authorized by statute, local district. And as such, it is my responsibility to do the very best for the students and the staff and the community that I serve. Being able to provide independent and most cost-effective insurance is just one very small piece of that, but it is a very important piece. If you talk about, and I know that there's been a lot of discussion today about the PEB, but if we take a look at that, because as a school board member who is not an actuarial, it's one of the very few places that I have to go to look at costs. So whether or not you agree with using the PEB as a comparison, I want to give you just a few numbers that Hillsborough currently has. Currently in our district, we spend $353,514 a month on health insurance premiums. That's the additional amount that we would pay. Currently, our teachers pay $77 a month for their portion. If they were on PEB, which I understand all of the concerns, the difference would be the amount that they would pay is $168. That's a significant increase. Now, I understand that there's some concerns about comparisons, but what I'm asking you to do is to slow this process down. I'm asking you to consider having an independent actuarial. I've heard information that, you know, one party or another did not want to have a study. The reality is, a few years ago, nobody wanted to have the study because nobody wanted to pay for it. But I think that the time has come that everybody recognizes we need to have a very good Oregon study based on Oregon data, based on the things that are going to drive insurance costs in this state. And I'm sorry, but this bill does not change any of those cost drivers. It takes very simple and the same plans and moves it into this bill, but it didn't address any of the issues that are going to help me in my district to be able to save money. In the Northwest Regional ESD, and I know you're all familiar with that regional ESD, it's hard to get everybody to agree on anything. And I can tell you that our superintendents have come out opposed to this legislation, not because they're necessarily opposed for all the same reasons, but because they do believe that it is time to have a really good solid look at this. That group represents 170 public schools and over 114,000 ADMW of our students in Oregon. That's a significant number. I would also ask you to consider the fact, I've heard it said, and I just wanted to make a note here, OSBA has been labeled as a special interest that we get this, you know, revenue from. I would just state that every organization that represents education in Oregon is a special interest group, and it should be. But Oregon School Board Association special interest is the students of the state. We don't have anything else that we represent except the students in our communities. So when I come before you and I just say simply, please consider all of the data that is missing. Please be careful because the decisions that you make in this will have a huge effect on the employees in my district. I don't want to see them have to pay more if the decisions that you make don't pan out. And I would rather see you take the thoughtful time and have very good studies that bring all of these people together and really have Oregon data, not based on some other state that didn't actually go through with their plan, so that when we go and have this discussion with our employees, that we all know that we're going to be doing the right thing for our employees and for the students of this state. With that, I thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Horton.
Good afternoon. My name is Jason Beirudi. I'm the current president of the Oregon Association of Health Underwriters. We are basically a group made up of independent insurance agents and representatives from most all of the carriers in Oregon. I did hand some written testimony in. First point I wanted to make is that in the interest of full disclosure, some of our members potentially do represent school districts around the state. None of us on the board that I know of do, but there's potential that some of us, some of them, our members do indeed. In the written testimony, there's basically three recommendations that we've come up with. We respectfully oppose the bill. The three areas that sort of echoing my new partner here, her comments, we would really encourage an independent study. We also are curious to see about if this whole package was set up in a bid and actually sent out to bid to the carriers in the state of Oregon, what kind of reaction you would get back from those carriers. And then also we would encourage to exempt only those districts that show their health care costs that are actually lower than PREP, not the ones that actually spend more money. There's four basic areas as an insurance agent, or if you work for a carrier, as you were sitting down with a client, that you would potentially find savings for them. And as I was listening to the testimony here today, I would agree with some of the things that were said. There's the basic areas are lower provider reimbursement, and it sounds like if you get a big group like this together, that potentially you would have some lower provider reimbursements, whether it was directly related to it or whether it was because of the carrier that took over the plan. If there was a carrier, potentially could have lower reimbursement levels, which then just shifts the cost to the majority of the people that we deal with every day, which is the commercial market. Lower utilization is another area where you would potentially see some savings, and I think you would all agree that shifting, for example, the OSBA, you shift all those people in one big pool, it's not going to just dramatically lower their claims costs in any capacity. You would assume that the claims costs are going to be relatively the same to what they already are, just because they have a different insurance plan, isn't going to lower it. Another area is to just reduce the benefits, and I think with everything we've heard today, we know that that's probably not a possibility. And then what we have listed as our third option on here would be administrative savings would be an area where you'd be potentially realizing the amount of money that we're talking about in savings here. And as was mentioned earlier, the OSBA currently has an administrative expense of less than 8%. I think it was 7.8%, which if you were to go and I think Mr. Brown would agree if he's still here, and you talk to any of the carriers, an administrative level of 8% or less is a very low number. It's a very good number. The PEB numbers were relatively close to the same. So I don't think that if people are talking about having 5% savings on admin expense, that all of a sudden you're going to get somebody to administer this plan for 3% of premium. It just my experience has been you can't get anything done for 3% if that's where indeed the savings are going to be. And then the final point I wanted to make is a lot of the discussion today has been comparing OSBA with PEB, and I think as you look at those two plans, also remember that the OSBA plan has a $100 deductible. PEB plan does not. So, in fact, if you were to sort of combine those plans together, you would expect that the claims cost for the OSB would actually go up because you would be absorbing, as the carrier would be absorbing more of the cost to those claims. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Beirudi. Quick question from Representative Jensen.
Just a very quick question. And got away from me. I'm sorry, missing your name. But and it's not so much just for you as it is for the OSBA and or OSBA members that might be here. I've been on this pony for a long time, and and certainly since the 94, not 94, but 4 years ago, 01, 03 session, The issue was brought before us. And one of the things I hear OSBA asking for today is another independent actuarial study. And I don't know that I'm in opposition to that. I think I may, on a personal level, feel very strong sympathy for that. But if I'm remembering correctly back to, some of the previous races on this pony, that option was given and suggested to OSBA, and they chose to not want to go that route then. Now, I'm finding this just a little bit incongruous. And so if y'all from that part of the world, would like to send me emails explaining where you got religion, when the conversion took place, I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Are you looking for an answer today? Because I've got religion. That request also came with a bill. And from my understanding and recognizing that I was a board member, not a staff member with OSBA, that none of the education partners were willing to take on the cost of that study independently. And so I remember that we had many of those discussions and asked for that, but we did not think that we should have to bear the brunt of a $300,000 to $500,000 study alone.
Thank you. One question for Senator Deckert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gregory, thank you for lending your expertise. I assume you underwrite for public, private businesses, companies.
Well, our name is probably a little bit misleading. None of us could actually underwrite anything. We're basically insurance agents, so we're the middleman that's been talked about here a little bit today. So we would sell the product to the client, the end user of it.
So perhaps just tapping your expertise momentarily, I have been often questioned why don't the private entities, if it's a better model for the central outlet to let that competition occur and 200 venues, 300 venues, and make decisions and then send the bill back in and use the model that's being employed in Oregon today. Why haven't more private entities where you have streamlined decision making employed that model?
As far as creating association type plans?
No, just for curiosity, we've been searching far and wide and have yet to find one private entity, a company we're looking for anymore, because they have such a streamlined decision making. We have a decision making like this where we go committee to committee, and private entities just get to make a decision, and efficiency usually drives those decisions. And in my time on this pony, Representative Jensen, we have yet to find a private entity that has employed any model that is similar to the state of Oregon's model, but I would lean on your experience more than mine in this field as to why, in that streamlined decision-making where efficiency is the biggest indicator, why they haven't employed that model.
Well, you're right. Generally, if you're talking about a Nike or something like that, that's the way they would do it. I've had a number of clients who have been purchased by larger entities, and they've traditionally done that. And a lot of the times, in fact, I just had one in January that they were acquired by very large, well-known employer, and their costs, in fact, went up significantly when they did that, and it had to do with areas of the country that they were in and areas of the state that they were in, and the pool that they were in, depending on how big a company is, depending on what laws they're subject to and that sort of thing. So, I think it's just sort of the way that you would do it. You have a centralized human resources area. You have you've got a CFO. You would always just do it that way. I think the difference with the school districts is that while they're all under the state of Oregon, you've got different employers in all different parts of the state. And if you were to look at the costs of health insurance, for example, around the state of Oregon, you look at the costs. I just saw a deal a couple weeks ago about the costs of what it costs to go to the hospital. And if you looked at the cost of what it costs to go to the hospital in Portland versus Salem, 40 miles away, it's a significant difference. There was live data that came from one of the carriers. It would be the same between Medford, between Eugene, and other places. There's not always a balance of what the claim costs are, what the hospital, what the providers get reimbursed. So I'm not sure that, I guess from our perspective, from the Oregon Association of Health Underwriters, if you could put the pool together and there was savings there, I mean, you could look at it and you know that's going to happen, I think we would be very supportive of it. But at this point, with knowing how the markets in the different parts of the states are, I'm not a believer of that would in fact happen.
Can I ask one other? But you would advise a private company to do because you have same circumstances where you have employees in Medford, employees in Salem, employees. But your advice to a private company would be disaggregate or centralize.
I would advise them to look at it. We our own employer just acquired a firm of about 60 employees in San Diego. It was significant cost savings for us to add those people onto our plan, so we did it. The problem with that is when we get our next renewal, we don't know what it's going to look like because the reimbursement for claim costs in Southern California is dramatically different than it is in Salem. Mm-hmm. So we did it, but it may not have been the best decision because, you know, we looked at it kind of a short-term basis versus what's going to happen over the long term. We don't know what's going to happen. So I would say look at it, but make sure that what you're stepping into is what you know it's going to be, and there's actually going to be savings there down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boone, Sortman. And here's what we're going to do. So, and I might get the Mr. Wilson, Mr. Peterson, and Mr. McCann might be angry with me, but this is what I'm going to do because I promised 5 o'clock. I'm going to ask that we're going to have Chuck Bennett, Rick Levine, Debbie Johnson, and Steve Bryant come up and do their testimony, and then we're going to end with Alan Bruner and Larry Wolf. I come from a debate background, and in debate, the status quo is easiest to defend, so the proposition goes first and last. So we're going to go here, and then we're going to end, and then that's going to be it. And keep in mind that the next Tuesday, if you want to sign up to come testify again. So.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. I will be quick. Mr. Colley from Roseburg basically presented the opposition. My name is Debbie Johnson, and I am the Health Resource Coordinator for the Beaverton School District. I did testify on February 1st, so I won't repeat that for those who were present for that testimony. However, basically what we want to say in Beaverton is Senate Bill 426 is penalizing those districts that are already efficient in managing their health care dollars. Beaverton has been very proactive and very efficient in their systems. We've worked together with our associations, and in fact, on February 1st, our BEA representative came in opposition to Senate Bill 426 with us, even though their OEA is for this bill. Because of our history of being proactive and being efficient, we just truly feel that you should take another look at this, as the other people in opposition have asked you to do. And I think all the different members have gone ahead and presented that to you today. I think it was a very strong presentation in opposition today. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for taking the time.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, I've been lobbying this issue for a couple of sessions, and I was able to pull out old testimony, say the same thing we've said every session on this issue. Please take a close look at it. There is, I think when you look at just the two pieces of testimony, there is a real dichotomy of opinion here. It is so substantially polarized on whether there are savings one way or another. You will hear over and over from school districts, as I do, and school administrators, there is either a potential cost savings or a substantial potential loss. We don't want you to abandon the idea of 426. We just want to know it's going to save money and not lose money. At this point, the testimony is absolutely inconclusive from what we've seen so far. I can't look at either and feel comfortable representing school administrators and talking with school administrators that they have hope on either side of it. We have asked before. We're glad to hear our colleagues around this issue also joining us in the idea of an independent or not so independent, frankly, just like to have somebody take a look at this issue and give us something definitive in terms of whether or not there are savings or losses. You have not heard anything definitive today from what we've heard. Maybe you're hearing something different because there's a, you know, if there is a priesthood in this discussion and there is an understood set of statements that result in you feeling confident, you have heard there will be real savings for school children. Please share the vocabulary with the rest of us, because I haven't heard it yet. We really plead with you to take the time between now and February to give us something definitive relative to the savings, and then move ahead. Not abandon 426 or this idea. This may have all kinds of value, but please give us something definitive before you make this really momentous decision. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. I have to say I failed to mention Mr. Levine, Rick Levine, so apologize.
That's fine. Thank you. Chair Iglesias, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Levine. I represent the Oregon Community College Association, which is 17 community colleges. You have a handout. I'm not going to go into that, but there are two things I'd like to basically lead into the record as to why we're opposed to the bill, even though we're actually exempt from the bill unless we choose to be included in Senate Bill 426. The issue is the board, and the board being able to determine who is eligible for being in the pool, the state pool. The bill calls for people who are under 50% to not be included, but it's actually very silent on what happens to those folks that are 50% to 75%. Most of you know, I believe, that community colleges have about a 3-to-1 ratio of part-time to full-time faculty. Most of our faculty is part-time. So we worry about how those folks are going to be treated. Will they be swept into this bill? The previous bill did have language that was satisfactory to community colleges. I've included that language in my handout. It basically fits in on page 2, line 26. I was told I needed to read this to insert D. Who was employed by a community college and is not included as an eligible employee under policy adopted by the Board of Education of the Community College District under a collective bargaining agreement, which basically means that you have to be in a collective bargaining agreement with a community college to be eligible to have insurance and then be covered under the bill. The second part I want to mention again is the board. What is bothersome with community colleges is that 6 out of 10 members of the board are actually employees of a public institution and who would receive benefits from whatever this particular board decides to do for the state of Oregon. This looks like, and it smells like, the original PERS board. I hate to say that, but it's bothersome that it is so heavily weighted with people who actually work for a public agency. So with that, I know you can read the rest of the testimony. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Bryant, and I'm the interim legislative director for the League of Oregon Cities, and I'll be very brief. I'm here representing Mike MacArthur, the executive director of the Association of Oregon Counties, and Mike McCauley, the executive director of the League of Oregon Cities. You might wonder why we're weighing in on this bill. Frankly, we looked at this bill. You need to know that we operate a very similar insurance trust for cities and counties. We believe very strongly in the model that trust provides to our customer base. It's a voluntary model as well. Many of our smaller communities subscribe to our insurance programs. What we like about the model is the high level of customer service that it provides and the cost effectiveness that the service provides on a competitive basis to our members. So I think what we want to say here is that if you have a way of building a better mousetrap that can be competitive, that would attract our interest and it would be somehow voluntary, we'd be very interested in looking at that. But so far we haven't seen the cost savings that have been demonstrated to us that would make us believe that this model is cost effective in the way that we'd want to go for public agencies in the state. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bryant. I think Mr. Levine, Ms. Bennett, Ms. Johnson, thank you very much. Okay, to wrap it up, Mr. Boone and Mr. Wolf, still here?
You have to catch a plane.
Oh, okay.
He'll come back on Tuesday.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Brenner.
No, Chair Galizio, and I'm about to lose my position as chair, so here we go. and remaining members of the committee, I beg your indulgence and thank you for remaining here this afternoon. My name is Alan Bruner, for the record. I am a high school teacher at Colton High School and was proud to represent the state of Oregon as the 2006 Oregon Teacher of the Year. I'm here basically as a spokesperson for the Oregon Education Association, upon whose board I sit, but I'm also here as a very concerned high school teacher, veteran teacher, in the smallest public high school in Clackamas County, in the smallest school district in Clackamas County. And in fact, having been local president and been able to negotiate and looked at our increasing health care costs, we found that as much as we enjoy the idea of competition on the free open market, and there are many Republicans in public education, just for the record, the thing I find fascinating is that we in the public sector are not allowed to compete freely because we don't have the opportunity for us to get together. The thing I find fascinating about this topic of Senate Bill 426, which I support in concept, is the fact that we right now in the smallest public high school in Clackamas County wind up purchasing our insurance through the Oregon School Boards Association health insurance pool. And we join a number of other small districts throughout the state that basically have nowhere else to go. We have 43 teachers and classified personnel, and that's it. So when we go to Blue Cross Blue Shield, Regents, we go to Kaiser, we go to whoever's out there, they look at us like they do other small and rural districts and say, gosh, you know, your risk pool is really small, and so we could do this for you, but it's going to be rough. We're just not big enough. Unfortunately, there is an entity like OSBA that is pleased to provide us the opportunity. What's intriguing is what would happen is if we had a larger entity, if we had the ability to actually compete at a larger level, kind of like what they do at Costco when you buy large things and drive the price down. The thing I find fascinating about sitting in this room today is listening to the fear that is very prevalent. There are a lot of dogs in the fight and a lot of individuals who have much at stake should this legislation go through, because there will be losers and there will be winners. And the thing I find fascinating about looking at this is, at least from a fiscal standpoint, it's kind of like the conversation I had with my principal the other day. It went like this. There were several rival school districts that were all looking to buy helmets. That's a fairly expensive piece of equipment for people who play football. And by themselves, it was cost prohibitive. So the three principals got together and said, gosh, what would happen if we went to the different manufacturers and said, hey, we've got an order of 800. We don't have to tell them what schools are from, but we have an order of 800. What kind of deal can you cut us? What can you do for us in this large pool? So rivals got together and had the opportunity to actually say, we got a better price. In fact, as my testimony reads, they were able to buy the same product for 50% less. They didn't know that savings was going to be there before they went to the company and asked. They didn't commission a study. They just said, I wonder what would happen if we were to do this. Let's go out and explore. This body has been challenged to do some more research, and perhaps as a science teacher and a math teacher myself, there may be some merit in that. But the thing that I find interesting is we have an incredible opportunity, at least from this math perspective, to buy in bulk. And it makes a lot of fiscal sense to me from where I sit. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bruner. And with that, I am going to close the public hearing on SB 426A, and we are adjourned. Thank you.